Thank you. I've just realised I've left a prop down there. Karen, can you pass me the bag? Thank you. This is a bit of a teaser. I've got a bag full of rope. It's not to hang myself. It's to use as a visual aid later. But we'll come to that in a bit. So lovely to be with you. It's been a while since I've been here, which may be some feedback. Anyway, familiar and not so familiar faces. Those of you who don't know me, congratulations. You're probably better off. Karen's with me this morning, so she's my regulator. If you want to give any feedback, go directly there. You've got an exciting series of talks coming up by the sounds of it. Sammy shared some of it with me as you begin your Go series. I've been pretty much constantly at DCYC for the last 5 or 6 weeks. So Sammy said, can you preach on the first one? I said, I don't think I've got time to do it justice. So I hope and I'm sure that God had a better plan by whoever's doing that next week. But I thought I'd take the opportunity to invite you to examine a place, if you like, of where you currently are, the place you stand as you are heading into this autumn series. It's a kind of time of year, as we reflected in our prayers, wasn't it, of change and moving on. And I guess I wanted to start by saying, if you're going on a journey, particularly up a mountain, which is why I'm using this aid, then the footholds you start from are often a good way of understanding whether the journey is going to be slippery and slidey or whether you're going to go with great fortitude. And as you head off, ready, if you like, to go up the mountain of the journey that God's got for you over the autumn period, I thought, I wonder if I can just bring a word to you based on Psalm 121 about where you are and where God has put you right now in terms of your ability to meet the needs of others, but also what God's saying to you as you set off into this autumn period together. And I guess if I broaden that out and say, well, let's think about our world, as we've just heard in the prayers. And it's been a year where almost we've had lots of literal storms, haven't we? But also, personally or locally or nationally or globally, there's been a lot of pain and strife, hasn't there, flying around. And we seem to be in the middle of the year with lots of uncertainty, whether it's wars and conflicts or elections that are certainly coming up in America and what have you. There's a lot of division and challenge around us as we, as God's people, but also as God's world, move forward. And I wanted to share with you, based on that kind of uncertain space that many around us are dwelling in, and maybe we are dwelling in, I don't know your situation, but the thoughts that I want to bring you are based on the thoughts of one of the Psalms, this Psalm 121, that kept Jesus connected to his Father and helped him, if you like, to keep his eye on the goal, to help him keep holding on. And it's certainly been my experience. I keep coming back to this psalm in my life as one of those places that you hold on to in the challenging times of life. I wonder what you are holding on to as you head into this next few months. So the 15 psalms of which Psalm 121 is a part is one of the psalms of ascent. And they represent, if you like, a mini playlist of songs or psalms that were sung by the Jews on their ways up to the feast days in the temple. They are deliberately positioned together as a block that are songs of encouragement. So keep that in your mind. This is a psalm to encourage you. And I wonder if they're your thing. You put together playlists, maybe in the past or the present. They're a big thing for you. Maybe they're not such a big thing. But when you're going on a journey, if you might put a playlist of songs together, maybe when you're going, you have a playlist of songs you use to go to the beach or to head off on holiday or maybe to pump you up for the big sporting fixture or maybe even for church. When I was doing my French exams and my degree, I used to listen, and obviously you'd imagine this wasn't digital at the time, even the most dodgy eyesighted of you will realise it was before digitisation, that I put together a whole playlist on a cassette, can you believe? For those younger, that's a little thing with spools on it. And it was all of French songs. As I was going into my exam, I had my little Walkman, do you remember them, some of you? And I'd listen to these French songs, always ending with Vanessa Paradis, Joe Le Taxi, for those of you who remember. That was partly so I had a visual image of a lovely thing in my mind, but it was also to keep me focused on feeling a bit more like a Frenchman. And when I play sport, so as you can tell, this is one I listen to a little bit less frequently, I like to listen to something that's got a bit pumped up aggression in it and gets me going, so I'm ready to go for it when I arrive. And in many ways, the Jews here were very similar. They sang and listened to these psalms as they went to the temple to worship God. These psalms were to encourage them that God was faithful and all the things that they knew about him were true. And they encouraged him, if you like, to go forward into God's presence. And that's my anchor thought for you today. As you go forward from here, let's think about the fact that this is God calling you more into his presence. Have the words, if you like, of Psalms 121 on a bit of a playlist replay over the months to come. Because there's one central thought to this psalm, which is, where do I find my help? Where do I find my help? And the answer is God. I didn't ask you to do this. If you want to put the words of the psalm up, I'll perhaps have them as my backdrop just to keep us focused. And the reason the psalm uses this imagery of mountains, if you like, is that God says, I have my help. I have my help from the maker of the mountains. He is, if you like, my mountain rescue. And I think if you cast your mind to think of mountains, there's probably very little in our created universe that looks more inspiring, is there, or more majestic and more secure than a range of mountains. But we tend to see mountains, don't we, as things to get over, to climb up and get down from, or to climb over to get to somewhere else in our cars or whatever. But as he writes, get your mind in the same space that the psalmist was in, which was he was looking at majestic mountains. He saw them all around him. He saw them protecting and defending Jerusalem. And the mountains reminded him, therefore, that he was protected and had security by the God who made the mountains. And we all have these things in our lives, don't we? Things that we perhaps hold on to for security. Things that we turn to for help. Things that we depend or rely on. It may be our church, our own family, our friends, or perhaps increasingly in a society that thinks about me and me and me, ourselves. I wonder where else the phrase, perhaps, I've got this, came from. But Psalm 121 reminds us there is, despite all those other things, many or most of which are good, there is nothing more dependable than God. Yes, the mountains, if you like, are totally immovable, but the maker of the mountains is even more immovable. And it's perhaps a good thing to stop and warn ourselves, isn't it, about that it's not all about me. It's not all about I or about what I do, about my church, about my existence. It absolutely isn't, because we worship not ourselves nor the things around us. We worship the Maker, God. God who provides, who welcomes, who shapes and uses us and the things around us in the world that he created is who we worship. We don't worship creation. We worship the Creator. And maybe to help us in that, if you think perhaps of a pot or a piece of art you particularly admire, you might admire the pot or the painting for its beauty. But if you meet the potter or the artist, it's to them you give the real praise, isn't it? And so too, if God has gifted us wonderful things, we look through and at them in order to understand that it's the Maker who we worship. The pot or the artwork wouldn't even exist without the potter or the artist, and nor too would our world, our own experiences, our own good things without God. We are created, and when we are as we were meant to be, we are beautiful, but it's the Creator, the Maker of us and our world that it's all about. And that's my anchor thought for you. I was down at camp a lot this summer, down at the field at Blackpool Sands, and I love at night going into a place, because we live in the city, where I just look up at the sky and see this unpolluted, starry sky. And it keeps reminding me of that song, that line in the song, "Who flung stars into space?" To remind me that it's all a bit more important than just what's going on in my world. Where we stand is one thing, but when we look up and appreciate the Creator of all things, we get an entirely different perspective on what's going on in our lives, don't we? Because looking up and reminding ourselves that we are who we are because of who God is the most important thing. Now, if we unpack this psalm very quickly together, the first two verses remind us just of that. If you look at them, they remind us to look up at our Creator. And the next verses, verses 3-8, remind us that the Creator God, the Maker of everything, is paying attention to you and to me. The verses use the Hebrew word again and again, Shema. S-H-E-M-A. And that word means that God hears us, listens to us, gives attention to us, and understands us. He watches over us. Six times in those verses, 3-8, we are reminded that the God of the universe preserves us, keeps us, watches over us. The Creator God of everything is watching over you right now. And I wonder, perhaps men more likely than women, I would imagine, if someone, and probably your wife if you're married, has ever accused you of not listening. The laughs, give it away. My wife's here. She can probably take over at this point and fill an hour. But anyway, you might have protested, dear husband or man, or anyone perhaps who was accused of not being listening, that you were doing something else at the same time, but you were listening. And you get this riposte back. You weren't really listening. And you say, but I heard you. In truth, you might have heard what was being said, but you weren't really listening. It's the cry of our hearts, isn't it, to be heard. It's said, and not just by Karen to me, I'm sure, I hope, that paying attention to someone is the foundation of love. Paying attention to someone is the foundation of love. And these words in Psalm 121, I want to say to you, are a reminder that the Maker of heaven and earth is paying attention to you. He is listening to you. He doesn't ever sleep. He pays attention to you 24/7. So I wonder if you, today, as you sit here, you feel loved and heard and paid attention to. You may not feel loved and heard and paid attention to by those around you, but I want to bring it back to you that God loves and cares and hears and pays attention to you right now. And he does the same for those you love. The same for those maybe he's put on your heart about, who am I going to bring to Alpha? Who should I open up this wonderful truth for? God is saying to you, I pay attention to you 24/7, 365 days of the year. And to be honest, it may be that for some of you, one of you, that might be all you need to hear today. That in your pain, in your challenge, God says, I'm paying attention to you. All that God has for you is wrapped up in that saying. Just keep going. Just keep holding on because I am paying attention to you. I want to say too that we all experience pain, don't we? And the psalmist here is no exception to that. He isn't writing this psalm from some theoretical happy place. He isn't ignorant of the fact that it's not always good and easy. There are dangers, if you like, on the journey we go through in our life. And he specifically stops and highlights them to us here. Now, I'm going to not dwell too deeply on what he's trying to say. I'm going to bring the themes out. You're a bright enough bunch, I'm sure, to work through what they might mean and whether they are implications for you individually. But we're going to look at them and just I'm just going to allow God through his Spirit to prompt your understanding. Let's look at verse 3. Verse 3 tells us that we stumble and we fall. Do you know it's very easy, isn't it, to slip on a journey when the conditions are tough. And when we slip, sometimes we stumble and sometimes we fall. And God might be saying to you right now, have you stumbled? Have you fallen? Do you need to get back on your feet? Do you need to rely on others to lift you back up? The psalmist says that's a real position for me. In verse 4, he reminds us that when we fall asleep, we become vulnerable. We become vulnerable to predators, to those who have no good in their hearts towards us, and to other people. If we doze off, if we switch off, if we detune from God, we are vulnerable. And in verses 5 and 6, he says this, if you don't have any shade or any shelter, and you're just out there in the heat all the time, you are in danger. You need to come out of the heat to get some shelter and some shadow, rather than just keep going on regardless, burning yourself out in the heat of the day and in the burdens of your life. It becomes dangerous if you don't know when to come out of the heat. But in verses 7 and 8, he gives us a promise. Those may be our situations, but he said, the Lord will keep you from all harm. He made the mountains. He who will keep you from all harm made those mountains you're looking at. And so he knows how to keep you as you journey on those mountains safe. So too he made your life. So he is massively invested in it and in keeping you safe as you journey, especially if you're journeying through mountainous times. He will watch over your life. And I guess sometimes it doesn't seem that way, does it? It doesn't seem that God is keeping us or you from all harm. You may, or someone you know and care deeply about, you may lose a loved one. You may fall to ill health. You may hit financial trouble or suffer emotional or physical hurt. And at times like that, if we're honest, I guess it doesn't always feel that God is keeping us from all harm and stress, does it? And it's a tempting thing to say, has God turned away from me? Has he stopped paying attention to me? Has he had a little nap? Is the psalmist here engaging in wishful thinking when he says those things to us? Is there some sort of keep calm and carry on mentality? But the truth is that if you read Psalm 121, it isn't naive. Many of the psalms were written in the toughest of times, while the Hebrews were in exile or refuge, really under the kosh. And they were written by those who at that time knew that life wasn't perfect or easy. They knew the deepest of struggles. They knew tragedy and hardship and loss. But we get the clue to what the psalmist wants to point us to in verse 7, where the word here that's translated as harm doesn't mean what perhaps we might say is hurt and hurtfulness. It actually means evil. It means the hurt behind the harm, the thing that causes the harm, the evil that causes the problems in our life, the cause of the darkness, the part we can't deal with ourselves because evil is active and around us. No, when we read here, the Lord will keep you from all harm, we are reading a prophetic statement. It's speaking out the truth of what's to come, the victory of what's to come. And in this case, the victory of what was to come and be made available to us on the cross as Jesus died. Because that's the way to reconnect us once again to the Father who never lets us go. And it's probably well captured in Romans 8, verses 38 and 39, where we have these fantastic verses to bring that home to us. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, nor anything else in all creation, will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. You know, there's a beautiful story I read recently about an old faithful Christian man. And he used to read his Bible day in, day out. And when he died, they found his Bible. And in it, they found one word written on page after page after page after page. It was this word, proved. And the man, each time he had read one of the countless promises in the Bible and experienced them in his own life, he wrote, proved, and then put the reason why he knew that promise was proved. Because the Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over you. It's proved. And I guess we find, don't we, often to our own problem, that if we look for security in something other than God, maybe our family, our friends, ourselves, as I said, we will come onto shaky ground at some time. We've all been let down by our own standards and by those of the world around us. Because from that place, we get insecurity. And we're not sure-footed on that journey of life. And maybe we take control of ourselves and our own life, and then we find it gets erratic and a bit dodgy and difficult. Maybe think back to the whole Brexit thing. Do you remember the slogan that Brexit was founded on? Take back control. That was a good idea, wasn't it? And it didn't get us anywhere, did it? And if you think about it, maybe a temptation we all suffer is when we feel insecure, we try to grab control ourselves, don't we? And that is absolutely not what God's pattern is for our life. It's absolutely not the best for us. And if you need another example other than Brexit, a bit more political, less political, as to why not, imagine you were driving a car and you had a passenger beside you who was totally insecure around the way you were driving, and suddenly they grab the steering wheel and turn it in a different direction. The one thing you can be sure of is them trying to grab control for themselves is likely to lead to a crash. That's what happens when we try to take control ourselves away from God. Now, I like to think, as a model husband and man, I loved what you said about manhood, it's brilliant, that I'm not particularly controlling, but I do like a properly loaded dishwasher. You know the scene, don't you? You know the scene. You've all been there. I could tell straight away. You know, you... Men get it. Anyway, no, I'm not going to say that. That's going to get me in trouble. But you know, you get to it, don't you? And you look, you open the dishwasher and you think, what's going on here? The space in between the plates and the bowls is all over the place. The knives and forks are all jumbled up. It's going to be a nightmare getting them out. I've got to sort them again. The bowls are where... the bowls are where the mugs should be. Those pans are filling up far too much space. It's just a nightmare. There is a correct way to load a dishwasher for those of us who are control freaks. And so we go on, don't we? In a world that feels fragile and vulnerable, we try to control anything. You know, placing our security in anything other than God is a very bad idea. In fact, it's a bit like Israel's original sin. You remember, Moses goes up the mountain to collect the Ten Commandments. And literally that happens straight after that unbelievable miracle of having been brought straight through the Red Sea and had their lives saved from them. God parted the Red Sea, saved them from death at the hands of Pharaoh. The next thing, if you like, having seen God act as their mountain rescue, Moses comes back down the mountain with the Ten Commandments, and you'll know the story, I'm sure, and he finds the people he just saved and Aaron making their own security, control if you like, in an idol, a Baal, a bull. And they were stood worshipping it, not God. How short their and our memories were. How shallow their gratitude about the fact that God was faithful. How fragile their commitment to what they knew to be true. How self-focused their confidence had become. Do you know what the Israelites were doing there? Was trying to rely on themselves and not God. But that was nothing when compared to the prophet Samuel, when the Israelites again asked Samuel for a king. Might seem fine on the surface. We all need someone to lead us. But there were two problems that they demonstrated. First was that they wanted a human king. No point saying a king who knew God and loved God and pointed them to God. They were interested in just a human king. And the second was the reason they wanted a king was to be like all the other nations around them, because it seemed to fit in. Beware the danger of fitting in rather than putting God in control. They were meant to be different. You are meant to be different. Do you remember that thing on our wrists we always used to wear sometimes, fully reliant on God, frog, those bracelets? That's what God says is control. Be fully reliant on me. They asked where their hope came from, the Israelites. Then they lowered their eyes again. They relied on the mountain rather than the mountain maker. But as we've seen recently, mountains can crumble, can't they? Sea cliffs can fall, even though they've been there for generations. Glaciers look permanent, but they can melt. What's underneath, when that shifts, what's on top is crumbling. I think one of the most interesting things for me, observation, is I go out and around quite a lot these days, is how much people were seen to be stood on shaky ground when COVID came. We all know people, don't we, who sadly never went back into church fellowship, who just were seemed to be found to be built on shaky ground. And that, for me, is a big heartburn, I'd have to say. You know, if I was running an Alpha course, I'd be saying, come back, dear prodigal, and let's refresh your memory of who God is. Because we get found out when we don't build our lives on God. And if we think about our world, let's just stop and think how many things have shifted underfoot in our world. It would have been unthinkable 25 years ago to need a food bank, to need a Christians Against Poverty organization, to need mental health workers, to have homeless refugees, to have refugee resettlement programs, to have active action to prevent climate catastrophe, and so on forth, wouldn't it? And now we exist in a society where these and many others like them have just become a complete imperative for even a basic existence for so many. And I cannot stop myself from thinking that it can't be a coincidence that all this has happened as we as society have walked away from God. We've become focused and oriented around ourselves. We've spent our time and our money and our energy just owning and having stuff, thinking about what gives me pleasure and of living by what makes me feel good and gives me my rights. We live in a chaotic world that has not stood on the truth of the fact that God is our maker and is watching over us. And I could go on, couldn't I? Because I could talk about the fact that we are all tired these days. There is little rest. Oh, and bizarrely, we've walked away from the concept of Sabbath. I could talk about the fact that, sadly, there is real issues with mental health and a whole industry growing up around well-being at exactly the time that people have forgotten that God is God of all. That's what happens when we try to take control. But it's also why this Psalm 121, I would urge you, put it in front of those you love. It's so crucial for us and for those around us, because nothing, absolutely nothing, can be relied upon as fully as our loving, eternal, constant, faithful Father. Frog, fully reliant on God. Do you remember the other wish spam we had? WWJD, what would Jesus do? They may be dodgy wristbands, but they are good advice for life, aren't they? That's what Psalm 121 reminds us of. What would Jesus do? Everything for you. Are you fully reliant on God, or are you just turning your attention to stand somewhere else? We have to stay connected to God if we want our life to have purpose, if we want our life to work. To use another set of illustrations, you know, if I took the cable out of this microphone and tried to speak into it, it wouldn't work, would it? If I disconnected myself from the source. If an athlete wants to win a gold medal, it's far better they perform well in all of the heats and training than just try and turn up and win on the day. If a Formula One driver thinks they can win from the back of a grid because they can flunk it during the what they call qualifying laps, isn't it? They're not going to have the main advantage to win the race to which they are called. Be bold, courageous, and consistent. Build on the right foundations and stay connected to the maker of our universe. As I finish, I just want to share one other illustration about a group of scientists who were exploring the Alps, and they were looking for a species of a very, very rare flower. And one day, through their binoculars, having traveled through the mountains for days upon end, they spotted this flower. And they were absolutely overjoyed that this thing of rare beauty was in their grasp. And they knew the reason they needed to get to it, which was because it contained some stuff that science needed to find out. The problem they had, though, was that it was over the other side of a massive ravine. They couldn't get to the flower. They couldn't reach it without lowering someone onto a rope into the ravine who knew also how to get up the other side to get the flower. Now, fortunately for them, these skilled scientists, they had a young mountain boy with them as their guide. He knew those mountains, but he also knew that you couldn't get down without being lowered into a rope. And so they turned to him and asked him whether, if they paid him handsomely, these rich, well-to-do people, they could tie the boy on a rope and lower him over the ravine to get the flower for them. "Can you do this for us?" they said. "We'll give you whatever you want." And he thought, and he turned to them, and he said, "I'll be back in a minute." And with that, he disappeared. They didn't know if he was coming back. Their frustration that they couldn't use what they had to get this thing was palpable. But he did turn up. And when he turned back up again, he had a grey-haired elderly man with him. And the boy looked at them all, and he said, "I'll go over that cliff for you. I'll get the flower. I'll accept the danger, but on one condition." "What's that?" they said. "It's that this man holds the rope. It's that this man holds the rope. He's my dad." The boy's confidence and his help was completely and only in the experience and love of his father, because he knew he wouldn't let him down. It wasn't in their money or their renowned attributes, their brilliance as scientists or their knowledge of plants. It wasn't even in the beauty of what they were chasing, or even in the fact there were loads of them. He knew his dad would never let go of the rope. He would never let go of the rope. And Psalm 121 reminds us that God will never let go of the rope. I wonder what your prayer is today, where your challenge is coming from. God will never let go of the rope. So please don't let go of the rope. I wonder whether you're anxious about anything today. Don't let go of the rope. I wonder if you're feeling discouraged, helpless, attacked. Don't let go of the rope. I would encourage you to hold on by reading these Psalms of Ascent. Read Psalm 121. That's what Jesus did. Get the Psalms inside you. Worship at the start of the day. Pay attention to the God of the universe because he is paying attention to you. Start the day right. Read the words he's written for you in the Word. Talk with him and listen with him, but don't let go of the rope. And take that rope to others. Invite them as you go into this series to hold on to the same rope as you do. And I want to just bring that to life for you visually, which is why I've brought the ropes here. And I'm going to need some help, if that's all right. I'd like you to pass this rope around, so each of you is holding a piece of it. You're going to have to bunch up, and then we're going to pray together, and I'm going to bring something to you, if that's all right. Just close your eyes, and I'll just bring you back to the place of my sharing with you. I don't know whether God was saying to you, you've let go of the rope. I don't know whether actually God might be saying to you, don't be anxious. He might be saying to you, just remember, I've got hold of this person too. And I need you to remind them of that. And let's just have a moment of silence as the rope is held tightly in your hand to remind yourself that God is paying attention to you. He is your mountain rescue. He's your heavenly dad. He will never let go of the rope. Hebrews 10:23 says this, let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promise. And Psalm 20 verse 7 says this, some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. So Father, if we have let go of the rope, so to speak, if we've lost our way with you, where we've looked with those eyes you gave us at other things, we come to you in repentance and ask for your forgiveness. And Lord, if we are hurting, if we are struggling, if we've got anxiety, if we are carrying burdens, we bring them back and place them at the feet of you, the maker of the mountains. You are our mountain rescue. Help us not just to stay attached and to walk well with you, but to show others in our walk and in our words that you have the answer to all things. And I pray a mighty blessing by the power of your Spirit over these people here, that they will be strengthened and enabled and have courage to carry the rope, to hold the rope for themselves as fellowship here, for the village of Woodbury and around, and for those they will speak to in these days to come, as they advance your name in this broken world. Bring hope. Bring a redemption song. As we hold on to you, may we carry that love evermore. Amen.